A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Niler 9 podcast. We are in end of year 2020 lists mode at the moment. Last week we had our songs of the year, which went down very well. And Andrea...
Did you get letters in post?
Got many things, yeah.
Oh, lovely.
Got a carrier pigeon.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, I got a Christmas card. I don't think that was related though.
Huh? I've yet to get a Christmas card.
Oh,
hello, it's me, Andrea, by the way. Hello, everyone.
So myself and Andrea are going to be talking about our albums of the year this year. In many ways, we're going to be doing 10 each. We have 10 each with some crossover, as expected. So we'll be counting down some of our favourite albums of this year. Obviously, it has been a strange year for everybody, but that did not stop the music being released or maybe... I don't know about you, but I was looking around at some end of year lists on different websites and stuff this week, really. And I noticed a wide array of different stuff. I looked at the NPR list today and I was like, wow, there's loads of stuff there. I would have expected to be on it, isn't on it. Loads of stuff I've never heard of. And that's always great. I love Listley's season for that. There's still plenty of albums I have in a long list that I have not listened to this year. And that is part of the fun, you know. You get to wrap up these ones that you do know and you love, and when it comes to the end of the year, and then the rest of the time over Christmas and January, you can spend listening to stuff you maybe missed, and that's the fun part as well. But I think lists are fun too, right?
Well, I don't know.
You're not sure.
I like the end of year kind of reflective nature of Listmas, but I found like ordering these really difficult today. So I mean, these are 10 that like the order of my 10 can change around a lot. Basically almost any of them could be number one depending on time of day, moon cycle, all of these different things. So yeah, I'm not going to stress too much about it. These are just 10 albums that I loved, and I hope other people, if they haven't heard them, might listen to them.
Okay, great. Well, that's all we can do, right?
So, yeah. Also, we should say that we are recording this roughly, what, how many hours? What are we? Seven. It's out at midnight.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, before the new Taylor Swift album drops. So thanks for that, Taylor.
Yet that's another Taylor nice Swift album.
Yeah.
But who knows? Maybe we'll be talking about Taylor Swift shortly. Who knows? Okay, I will start with my, we're going to do maybe quickly some five records in the kind of bottom 10 and then go into the top ones. So I will start with, first of all, an album that I listened to a lot this summer, which became very much my, when I say background listening, I don't think it's fair, it doesn't seem like a fair term, but it's certainly an album I put on in the background to put on to set a mood and listen to an awful lot. It's not one of those albums that I was like, this is the best thing ever, but it's one I went back to an awful lot. And it is by a band called Krang Bin, I think. That's what they're called. The album is called Mordecai. And I chose for the songs for this episode, rather than chose maybe the most obvious ones, I chose some of the album ones just to give you a bit more of a flavor of what that was. So this is Krang Bin and Mordecai. They are a Houston-based trio. They've always been had this kind of vibe where it's like dubby, a bit of funk, a bit of like surf rock, kind of instrumental stuff. For this album, there's vocals on nearly every song, which, you know, radical. But still, you know, I love that it's very simple. It's very nice. It's very bright music. And it was one that I bought on vinyl this year and one that I went back to an awful lot. So I'm going to play a song from their album called Connaissez de Face. And this is Krang Bin.
I love this. This is great.
That was Krang Bin. The album is called Mordecai, and they had some great bops like that this year. There's a really good Song Exploder episode with them, if you want to go and listen to that. But yeah, that is one of the album tracks, Connaissez de Face. And I really enjoy this band. It's like, it's nothing, it's going to earth-shaking. It's not going to break the mold in any way. But, you know, sometimes you just need a really lovely bright melodious album to put on in the background, and this was one of the ones that I went to a lot this year. So Andrea, what is your first choice on this podcast?
Okay, so my number 10 album is by Aoife Nessa Francis, and it is called Land of No Junction. It's her debut LP, and maybe we'll take a little listen to it and then I can chat about it.
Sure, this is Land of No Junction.
That's the title track from Aoife Nessa Francis, Land of No Junction, an album that I can't believe came out this year.
Yeah, that was early January, wasn't it?
Early January, yeah. I think at the time, Dean Van Nguyen said that it was the first great album of 2020. And I agree with him, actually. It's just such a beautiful kind of concept for an album. She misheard the name of a Welsh junction, which I won't try and pronounce it. She misheard it as Land of No Junction and kind of went off on that theme. And the lyrics in the album were written during kind of like free writing exercises. So there is this kind of sense of liminality of existing kind of in between things. And it sometimes goes a little bit political. Sometimes it's more dreamlike, but it's, I think, encapsulates really well the experience of being at some kind of a crossroads or some kind of an in-between stage in life, which is a theme that has come up in a lot of albums this year, a lot of debut albums actually. And I think it's one that she plays with really masterfully. And I just think it's absolutely excellent. I think her vocal tones are so beautiful. She collaborated with Keane Nugent on this, does a great job. Yeah, if you haven't listened to it yet, definitely get on Land of No Junction.
Yeah, I think did we review this in the first podcast of the year?
I think we might have.
Yeah, wow.
That seems likely. Yeah,
about a year ago. Wow. Did you watch Aoife on Other Voices this week?
I did. God, Other Voices was great, wasn't it?
I really enjoyed it. Yeah, I loved it. The event. really felt like a nice event. And
it was lovely to have the Christmas tree up and just drink some Baileys and watch Other Voices. It was great.
Yeah, absolutely. I just had a great time with it and enjoyed a lot of things that were on it, including one of the acts that we'll talk about in a bit. But for now, that was your choice. That was Aoife Nessa France's album is called Land of No Junction. My next choice is a act called Kelly Lee Owens. She's a Welsh producer, and her album was the second album she's released. It comes 3 years after her debut. It was called Inner Song. Oh, I'm just checking. Yeah, did I write that down? It is called Inner Song. And just one of those albums that I went back to a lot this year again. Very much kind of a little bit between ambient and kind of dance floor music, bit of techno kind of stuff going on. But also in terms of lyrics, exploring kind of struggles, mental struggles and things, personal pain that she's experienced herself. Also, while talking about, you know, climate change and the natural world. And the song I'm going to play, it does actually open up with the cover of Radiohead's Arpeggi on the album, which is kind of an unusual way to start an album, especially your second album, but it works quite well. There's lots of great tunes on this, and it goes from like kind of there's kind of balls to the walls kind of techno tracks on this, but then there's also very meandering, lovely songs on it as well. One featuring John Cale, which I'm going to play, who's also a fellow Welsh artist, of course. And so the song that John Cale features on is called Corner of My Sky, and it sounds like this.
The moon in the corner of my sky is curdling in the sun. The fish are rising in the creek, the foxes in their lairs.
That is Kelly Leons featuring John Cale. Song is called Corner of My Sky. One that kind of like crept up on me this year for sure. One that I went back to more than I realized, and only when I was kind of going doing my list, I was like, oh yeah, I've been listening to that for a bit actually. So that was.
I think that song to me sounds like what The Fear feels like.
Yeah, it does have
I felt anxiety listening to that.
Yeah, it does have that kind of quality. All right. But I did choose that. I did choose that song because it's slightly different to the rest of the album. There's Kelly Leon sings a lot of vocals on it herself, and says the power of conceptualizing who you are has really informed the album. And there's samples of things like people ice skating and melting glacial ice. So it's all in there, and a really interesting album. So what is your next choice for album of the year?
My next choice for album of the year is a album that was inspired by Lancome. And the kind of aesthetics around Lancome's earlier albums.
Of course.
It is Taylor Swift's Folklore.
Yeah, okay. Okay, this is Cardigan.
Vintage tea, brand new phone, high heels on, cobblestones. When you are young, they assume you know nothing. Sequin smile. Black lipstick, sensual politics. When you are young, they assume you know nothing. But I knew you, dancing in your Levi's, drunk under a streetlight. I knew you, hand under my sweatshirt, baby, kiss it better. And when I felt like I was I was your favorite. A friend to all is a friend to none. Chase two girls, lose the one. When you are young, they assume you know nothing. But I knew you, playing hide and seek and giving me your weekends. I knew you, your heartbeat.
So that's Cardigan by Taylor Swift, an album I kind of felt we were obliged to include because it was such a big album this year. But I actually went back and listened to it while I was putting this list together, and I still really enjoy it. I still I'm not fully convinced by all of it, we'll say, but I enjoy what she's done. She created this kind of moment of pause in a weird year where everyone was just kind of invited to just lean into these like these narratives instead of these very like I'm Taylor Swift, here is my story kind of things. So I really enjoyed the collaborations on it. I enjoy the whole aesthetic around it, even though I do feel a bit strange about like selling cardigans for like a lot of money and the fact that like a lot of Aran jumpers sold out like all over the world. I just find that really odd. But I think as an album in Taylor Swift's kind of discography, it's going to stand up as a really big moment for her, as a really big turning point for her as a songwriter. And I just really enjoyed what she did with it. Yep.
Very good. We did an extensive review of the album when it came out.
We did.
And as you alluded to earlier on, there is a second album coming today.
Tonight.
Tonight, Friday, December 11th, called Evermore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it seems to be from the same sessions. There's some of the same people. Haim are on it. Bon Iver is on it.
Oh.
Who else is on it? There's somebody else I saw listed on it. Oh, I think it's just the National. It said featuring the National. So it'll be interesting to see what that is, sounds like. Right now, I'm glad we don't have time to review it. Just because.
That's what I was thinking. I saw that it was being released tonight, and I was like, oh, it's actually going to be really nice to listen to an album and not be obliged to listen to it for review or for, like, I can just listen to it. I don't have to outwardly put any opinion into the world about it. I can just listen to it as a normal punter, and I'm excited about that.
Indeed you can. Okay, that was Taylor Swift. Album is called
Folklore.
Yes, and so my next choice is another one of these albums that crept up on me over the course of a year. When I actually heard this album first, I wasn't a fan of it. I was actually a bit disappointed. It's by Yeji, who's a Korean-American producer, it's essentially a mixtape. It's called What We Drew. I don't know, the word mixtape is used a lot now to denote somebody who doesn't want to release their album just yet or doesn't want the pressure of releasing a debut album. I think Yeji gave me a lot of fun and a lot of joy this year, because her music is kind of bouncy and interesting, and the mixtape, she did a great Boiler Room set, which I'd definitely recommend you watch, which was very innovative, actually, in terms of the live stream stuff and a DJ kind of live hybrid set. I really enjoyed it. Her sitting on a couch with loads of animated people coming in and out and video games. And stuff.
This was during lockdown, was it?
Yeah, it was great. Really good. But I have actually a bit of a saga with this album. I bought it in August before I didn't have an office anymore. And it was sent to the office and then sent back to New York. And fair play to the label or distributors or VNG, I think it is. They sent out another copy and I got it this week. So finally,
yay,
it arrived. It can't be a year of music without having at least one record that takes a while to get to you. This year, obviously, we had the Jai Paul vinyl that finally arrived.
I still don't have that record.
Do you not?
That's in an ex-colleague house.
Right.
He had to go and collect it. And I ordered something off eBay this week and eBay stored my old work address. So now, very embarrassingly, it's been sent to them again. So.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Sorry, guys.
Okay. Well, I received this week. And so actually I've been giving it a lot of listens this week as well. So it probably helped contribute to it. I'm going to play a song called Spell, which features two people I don't know called Glam and Yon Yon. This is Yeji. Okay, that was Yeji, song on from the What We Drew mixtape called Spell. So the album is called What We Drew. It came out on XL Records this year. And so, Andrea, what is your next choice?
My next choice is another Irish artist. Her name is Niamh Regan, and the album is called Hemet. This is an album that you and I have been kind of enamored with for the past couple of months.
Absolutely.
We talk about it all the time, whether we're recording the podcast or not, or whether we're watching other voices and just texting each other saying, Niamh's doing great. And we had the pleasure of interviewing her for the podcast probably a month and a half ago or so.
Yeah, just after the album. So lovely. The album. Yeah. really was a surprising release for me anyway. Did, you know, an artist who had released a couple of EPs and stuff, and then came out with this really fully formed, beautiful album. And really what I love about it, and it was very close to being my number one album of the Irish album of the year, which you can now look at the 25 choices that I picked for the Irish albums of 2020 on that. But I love that, you know, lyrically there's a lot going on in this, and, you know, it's, they're quite mature lyrics. They're talking about, you know, being a mother, having lost a mother, meeting old friends and being on a path maybe in different parts of your life where maybe you've got married since you saw this person last, about worrying too much and giving yourself too much of a hard time. I think it's an absolute beautiful album, and her voice is spectacular throughout. And it was, yes, brilliant to see her on Other Voices. And I'm rooting for her. And I'm rooting that more people get to hear this album, because I think it's one of the most probably underrated albums just because of the nature of it being released this year. And hopefully she gets to do a lot of gigs off the back of that. It seems like Other Voices is a good start for her. So what song would you like to play? You said Two Seagulls, right? That's one of one of the album ones. Okay, let's hear Two Seagulls from Niamh Regan's album, Hemet.
Side of this road, when silence falls down like the sheet between us, I can't hear what you're saying. I cannot hear what you're saying. And I hope we hold hands once again and rewrite the pages we left. I can't hear what you're saying. I cannot hear what you're saying. And I was not the hammer we thought it was. It hit from the inside and it bled from the skin. Patiently waiting. Are we patiently waiting? And I saw two seagulls against a grey sky. They flew to the top, not a care in their sights. It reminds me of us in a bubble of trust. It reminds me of
that was Niamh Regan.
I think that's my favorite track on that album. I think it's so beautiful. And I think it encapsulates really what I loved about that album the first time I heard it, because I didn't hear any buzz about this album. This was an album that was, I think, just sent to me, or it arrived at me without any kind of fanfare or preconceived ideas. I didn't even know what style of music it was going to be when I pressed play on it, and I was just completely taken in by it. And I think it achieved for me this year what Folklore, I think, achieved for a lot of other people, which is what I alluded to before about this moment of stillness, or this moment of just listening to something that has like beauty for its own sake, and these gorgeous vignettes, these really personal storytelling that at the same time doesn't give too much away. There's still a lot of mystery around Niamh Regan. Like, you want to learn more about her. You want to ask her about the lyrics. You want to ask her about the places, what things mean. And it's just a surprising album that just really took hold of me this year. This album could be anywhere on this list for me. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not Its placement here isn't necessarily indicative of how I feel about it compared to the other albums, but yeah, stunning work.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, not to pat ourselves on the back, but I think we were one of the first people to, like, give her a bit of a platform in terms of the album.
Were we? That's good.
But yeah, that's what we're here for. That's what we do. That was Niamh Regan. The album was called Hemet. My next choice is a bit of a banger, as most of them this year seem to be, because 2020 for me was a lot about escapism.
Look, it's yin and yang for us, Niall. I bring the sad. You bring the dance floor.
Yeah. Okay, well, this is the last act I saw live this year properly in the Academy 2 of all places. The album is Georgia and it's called Seeking Thrills. The English producer, second album, just a really smart and confident and really well put together album of kind of electro pop kind of stuff. Georgia live plays drums and everything else and is the only person on stage. It was the last gig I saw this year, and it was something that's going to be indelibly marked as a very much a 2020 experience. This came out in February, I believe. And so the album's called Seeking Thrills. I'll play the opening track called Started Out. Georgia, album is called Seeking Thrills, and incidentally we're doing a podcast awards next week, and that is all of the things that don't really fit in to albums and songs, and one of them may be artwork, and I think we might end up being Georgia's Seeking Thrills artwork. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but
I haven't seen it. I'll give it a little Google now.
It's brilliant. It looks like it's great because it's like, it's so perfect for modern consumption because it looks like a club scene. And then when you actually look at it, it's like it's a load of kids who are just looking like they're having a great time in a club.
That's brilliant.
It's very good.
It's that's one of my
favorite covers of 2020. So
that's a brilliant cover. It looks very kind of Julia Jacqueline. It could be like a Julia Jacqueline cover as well. Do you know that kind of way?
Yeah.
It's just that sort of like old photo nostalgia Garfield t-shirt. Love it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, our next choice is actually on both of our lists. It is a album from Andy Schauf, which we reviewed back in February, I believe.
Is this in the same place on your list or is it further on in your list? Because this is my number 7.
Yeah, it's there or thereabouts. Yeah, so I think it's... Yeah, I think it actually is.
Really committing to this whole countdown format.
Yeah, I mean, no, it's I'm happy with where it's sitting. Number cool. 7 then, okay. Is it? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe it's number 6 for me, I think. Maybe. 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, 5. Anyway, Neon Skyline is the name of the album. Canadian artist, a surprisingly 2020 album, actually, in terms of how small the concerns of the album actually are, in a time where we could go very few places. This is an album chiefly concerned with a bar, a Toronto bar called the Neon Skyline, in which many of the album's events unfold. It's essentially a novella in musical form about the protagonist, Andy, or I don't think he's ever named, but goes out drinking with his friends and sitting in a bar, and then thinks about an old flame and talks about her and then meets her, and just really very small. You mentioned the word vignettes earlier on, very much small vignettes. There's one song about the bartender smoking a clove cigarette, and that,
I love that song.
Yeah, that prompts his thoughts about his previous relationship and a summer dress and green plastic tables. So it kind of moves between the main story, which is Andy's kind of inner monologue and his just him hanging out in his bar with his friend Charlie and Claire, and then just past remembrances and, you know, the use of Sonder, making it a part of the narrative, the realization that everyone else is also living a story, living a life as well. And there's some great lines on it. I miss this. Like when he finally does meet Judy, he's like, she says, "I miss this." And he goes, "I miss this too." I was like, "Actually, I was talking about your coat." Things like that. The music is very much like Paul Simon is the one, the influence I keep thinking of. It's very like nice, bright and breezy acoustic kind of folk music. Lovely, just a lovely tilt to it. So yeah, I will give the floor to yourself now to espouse more on the Neon Skyline.
Well, I'd like to echo everything you said there. And I think the thing that grabs you initially about this album before you kind of lean into the concept is just how bright it sounds with that first song. I mean, the first song is Neon Skyline, and it's just so bright and familiar. And yes, there are very, very strong Paul Simon influences here. Even his kind of vocal delivery in that first song is very kind of Paul Simon Graceland-esque, which, I mean, maybe that would annoy some people. It doesn't annoy me at all. Big Paul Simon fan, and I don't mind people kind of homaging to him or, you know, ripping him off. I think it's the narrative really here that I love so much. I love how it feels so familiar. Even if you've never had this night, everyone's kind of had this night. Everyone's kind of had these conversations with their friends. Everyone's kind of had those meetings with like ex-partners or old friends, or coming back to a town that is maybe a little bit different to you. And it's never the way it is in pop songs and in movies and stuff. It's a lot more like this. It's a lot more wry and probably a bit funnier. It probably involves you embarrassing yourself a little bit more. And I just think he's an excellent lyricist. Like, I feel like at the end of this album, you know Charlie, you know Judy, you know, who's the bartender? Rose, like, you know these people, and you can kind of transpose them onto different people in your own life and think, oh well, yeah, I guess that person would be my Charlie, or that person would be my Rose, that person would be my Judy, and so on. And it's for such a kind of wry, at times almost like sarcastic album, there's also so much truth in it. And like you said, what I love about it is that it's so small and so contained. You really actually get a sense of space in the album. You kind of feel like you know how far away the Neon Skyline is from the next place that they move on to. You kind of know what the streets around there look like. And he's not telling you any of this. This is all just done really brilliantly through just these little snippets of conversations that he might walk past. There's a real sense of space in this album that I think is properly brilliant. And like, most importantly, it's really fun to listen to. It's fun to read the lyrics along with it. It's fun to get to know these characters. And I think the comparison to a novella is really, really apt, because it's short, it's sweet, it's snappy, but it's also something that will linger with you for a while. And I really enjoyed actually going back to this album this week, just going back into that world, because he does build a world here, no matter how small it is.
And it's something that everyone can relate to. Like, there's a song called The Moon, and you're like, we're going to the moon, and the moon is actually just like the local nightclub, like anyone
the
else
nightclub.
Can relate to.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's, you know, it's leaving the garage bar and walking up to Workman's, you know, like, that's the kind of feeling that you get from it, and the conversations that you have along the way, the people you pass, people you run into. It's really, it's quaint in a way, and really, really charming.
Absolutely. Okay, let's play the title track, Neon Skyline, from Andy Schaus, The Neon Skyline.
I called up Charlie about 9:15 and said, what's going on tonight? He said no plans, but I wouldn't mind holding a letterhead tonight. I said, come to the skyline, I'll be washing my sins away. Oh, he just laughed, said I'll be late, you know how I can be. I looked in my fridge, it was a dark scene, so I buttered some bread. Chewed my way out the door and walked down the street to the neon skyline. I grabbed myself a stool at the bar. Oh, somehow Rose always knows just exactly what I need. She didn't ask, she just opened a cold can and set it down in front of me. I said thanks and thought about how Judy used to come here with me. But I got so tired of her calling this our disease. Cause I'm just fine. Sometimes I need to clear my mind, you know how that can be.
That is The Neon Skyline from Andy Schaus, and as you can hear there, in about 90 seconds, you get the scene setting, bar scene, and the fact that it's a very dark scene in his own fridge. So, and you get a couple of references even to his past love there. You get a reference to, the bartender as well. So it's just really, really lovely story, and it just, I always think, you know, you think of those kind of classic American bars that you see, or you go to sometimes in real life, but also see in TV and movies, and a lot of neon, like the name implies. So yeah, one of those ones that has really stuck with me, and a lovely small story. Our next artists are actually previous guests and co-hosts on the show. And they were this week I picked them as the number one Irish album of 2020. It is, of course, Pillow Queens, and the album is called In Waiting, and they are Pamela Connolly, Sarah Corcoran, Rachel Lyons, and Cathy McGuinness. This was one of those albums that has, again, really grew on me the more I listened to it. You know, when you hear an album first and you've heard a good few number of the songs on it, but then over the course of maybe 7 or 8 listens, you kind of, then they start to feel like they really belong together. And I think I've got a lot of that even the last couple of weeks when listening to this album and making my list for Irish albums of the year. And In Waiting was one I went back to a lot. I think it's a real beautiful album with a lot of vulnerable songs. There's a lot of uplifting kind of inclusivity in there, about like songs like Brothers, about sibling support and grief, and you know, kind of almost like and very anthemic songs as well, like Gay Girls and Holy Show. And I just think Pillow Queens are a great band, and even watching them again, Oh the Voices properly last week, I really felt that. I felt, you know, they really have come on a lot in 3 years since they arrived. Production on this album is worth mentioning because it's by Tommy McLaughlin and recorded in Donegal's Attica Audio Studios. I think there's a lovely sheen and buzz to this that and warmth to this album that I think that they've really hit on, that I think is going to really suit them going forward. I think ultimately there's just loads of great songs on this album, and it is one that I went back to an awful lot. So I will play the opening track, actually, Holy Show, from Pillow Queen's album.
I'm still a baby. If you're still waiting outside, I've got your eyes and cheeks in front of me, filling the space between my thighs. I roll you up and crack you open. We like a couple of teens just singing back in Holy Ghost and apologizing me. If you remember a thing about it, tell me that it's not by word or even to say.
So I put up the best Irish albums list yesterday, and Pillow Queens earlier on today said, the first time you played a gig in front of Niler, we all had to take Imodium to calm our tum-tums. So honestly, this means the world. I was like, I hope it wasn't something to do with me being there. God, but no, I think it wasn't. But that's great. I'm really happy. I'm very pleased for Pillow Queens and the year they've had, despite the fact that bands cannot tour, and In Waiting is a great album. And I hope that they will go on and do even bigger things. Holy Show is one of those songs that just really, I think it's one of my favorite songs this year. It's just, it's very anthemic, and I think Pillow Queens are really good at doing that kind of thing.
I wholeheartedly agree. I had Holy Show as one of my favorite tracks of the year last week on the podcast, and said it before, I'll say it again, if I ever get to see them live anytime soon, I will cry my eyes out.
Okay, the floor is yours. What is your next album?
Okay, so my number six album is by Nubia Garcia. I hope I'm pronouncing the first name right there. She is a saxophonist from London, and the album is called Source. It's a jazz album. It's completely gorgeous and dizzying, that spans from kind of free jazz to Afro-Caribbean influences. She has said about the album that it represents the kind of hectic life of a gigging musician in London. And I just love how well she kind of fits with her band on this album. All of the arrangements sound at the same time really meticulously planned, but also very free. So she strikes a really beautiful balance there. There's a lovely push-pull between her and the band, especially in the opening track, which is 12 minutes long, which we'll play a clip of. That's just really gorgeous to listen to. Yeah, it's just very kind of impressionistic, almost visual music that I think gets better with every listen, because there's so much going on in it that you do have to kind of spend time with it. And it is immediately rewarding, but it's one of those albums that the more you go back to it, the more you unearth. So yeah, this is my number six album, Nubia Garcia. And the track that we're going to listen to is called, help me out now,
Pace.
It's called Ace. Pace. Thank you.
Okay, Pace. Here's Nubia Garcia.
Ace. We'll be right back.
Nubia Garcia. A song is called Pace and the album is called Source. There we go. Okay,
that's
It's actually your choice again, and because we have a shared choice next. So tell me, what is your next album? Which is this number five?
My number five is Adrian Lenker, kind of a double album, songs, instrumentals that she brought out earlier this year. And it's just so beautiful. The track I chose from it, I had a track from it last week on the songs of the year list, and I wanted to include this other track called Zombie Girl on it, because I think it's also one of my favorite songs of the year. It's just such a beautifully spacious album. Like, I think a lot of it was recorded a lot of it was recorded on tape. She kind of locked herself away for a little while and wrote these songs and recorded them herself. So it does kind of sound like an album of isolation. And I think it's lovely to kind of hear her in that atmosphere and in that space, especially since, you know, 2019 was a really huge year for Big Thief, her band, releasing two records. And we kind of have grown used to hearing her in that kind of space with, like, working with other people, especially that second album that they released. It was just so, you could feel people in the room, you could feel them moving closer to each other and further away, whereas this now is just Adrian Lenker. I think I also said last week that she's one of the best, like, musicians of her generation. And I think if you were ready to get into her solo stuff, which is a bit more subdued and a bit more introspective and even kind of more philosophical than her work with Big Thief, then I think this would actually be a really great album to start with. There's a lot of sort of background noise in it of, you know, birds or just like the breeze moving through trees. It's a very kind of tactile album without going overboard with it. It just feels very natural, very kind of a snapshot of a moment in time of somebody who is in isolation and bubbling over with creativity. And it's really, really beautiful, stunning work from her. She's just, you know, she keeps knocking it out of the park for me. So the track I've chosen is called Zombie Girl, which has some of my favorite lyrics of the year in it. And you can definitely hear that kind of atmospheric, natural environment in this track.
Okay, here is Adrian Lenker and Zombie.
I could have felt you there, and I almost could have kissed your hair, but the emptiness withdrew me from any kind of wishful prayer. Oh, emptiness, tell me about your nature. Maybe I've been getting you wrong. I cover you with questions, cover you with explanations, cover you with music. In the next night, dreaming skin, but the dream escaped so easily, and I woke up to the road again. How you were drained through something kind of sweet and blue, and I knew that you'd been understanding everything that I'd said to about emptiness. Tell me about your nature.
That's Adrian Lenker from the album Songs, just simply called Songs, Niall.
Songs, lowercase s.
Yes, lowercase s. Don't like when people
a lot
do
of
that,
this lowercase stuff going around this year now.
Not happy about it now. Not happy about
her,
it.
Herself there had it as well with Folklore.
Yeah. Why are you doing that? Just laziness.
I don't know.
Pure laziness. I don't know. That's all. It is pure laziness now. Okay, our next choice is a joint choice. So it is an album we devoted a whole podcast episode to. It is from Phoebe Bridgers and it's called Punisher. And if anything, Phoebe Bridgers is one of those artists that has had a great year this year, right? Like, really fantastic. Second album came out, really lifted The sound that she had moved her songwriting on more intimate, more powerful, more interesting. All like things can be described in a positive way in terms of her artistry, and also did a lot of really great live stream stuff and videos and stuff like that. Just really came into her own, I felt, this year. You can go back and listen to the podcast in full about that, but we talked a lot about, you know, how there's so many lines on this, there's so many great lyrics, there's so many great songs on this, and there's such a good vibe to Phoebe Bridgers' music. And yeah, what do you think? What can we say about Phoebe Bridgers in December after having sat with it for a good few months?
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree that this year has been amazing for her. I mean, for people who were fans of her already, I think a lot of us were kind of just waiting for this to happen. It's surprising that Punisher is the album that she fully broke into the mainstream with, and not her most recent record, because I'd argue that Punisher is a bit is maybe a little bit harder to get to find your way into. I think you kind of it would benefit you to kind of know her already going into Punisher. That said, you could definitely go into it, but I just think it would be better if you kind of know her stuff and can kind of see the growth that she has there. I can't remember who said it about Phoebe, but somebody said something like she writes beautifully about boredom and sadness. And I think that kind of encapsulates her. Like, she just has this way of writing about youth and ennui and the feeling of being a bit fed up in a really beautiful way. And Punisher is an album that is just full of these kind of mundane moments that are elevated and kind of held up as big philosophical questions and trying to find meaning in them. I mean, one of my favorite moments on the album is on the song Chinese Satellite, where she's driving and she can't find a star to wish on when she's looking to the sky for meaning. So she makes a wish on a satellite instead, and just kind of that idea of making do. I think Kyoto is a wonderful song. It was nearly on my songs of the year last week, this kind of relationship with her father and homesickness and how depression and feeling sad can make you hate a place as beautiful as Kyoto. And I think that she's so good at just making the hard stuff accessible, and this kind of this universality that is imbued in folk music, and applying quite emo like topics and themes to it. And I like in the way that kind of Bright Eyes and Death Cab for Cutie kind of do as well. And like, she's just really like precise. There's nothing superfluous on the album. Everything has its role, everything plays its part. I think the love letter to Elliot Smith, which is Punisher, is just done in such a beautifully kind of contrived way. Like, it's an odd way to write a love letter to an artist, is to do it from the point of view of the person who's going to be hanging around and annoying you after the show and like hanging around the merch stand and stuff. She just does it so brilliantly. She's tapped into something about youth that it's so hard to kind of put your finger on it, but she's done it here. And huge year for Phoebe, and I'm glad I know her.
Yeah, she's brilliant. Obviously one of our favorite artists probably together, and yeah,
she's just the Julia Jacqueline of this year, I think. We had Julia last year, this year it's Phoebe.
And in a previous time, I did confuse the two. knew them, I would get them mixed up. But yeah, Punisher is one of those albums that's been evergreen this year. And we're going to play a Kyoto from us. So let's hear Kyoto.
Day off in Kyoto. Don't
Okay, that was Phoebe Bridgers, and album is called Punisher. Okay, we are down to the last few albums that we're going to talk
what
about.
What number are we on now?
We are on...
So Phoebe was my number four.
Yeah, so we're on your number three now.
We're on my number three now. Okay, so my number three is an album called Colour Theory by Soccer Mommy. This is an album that I have gone back to a lot this year. I think it was released in April, maybe March. I actually got to interview Soccer Mom in like a day that just couldn't exist now. I remember it was the day of the Choice Prize. I was all stressed because I had like a phoner with Soccer Mommy, and I arrived at your office about like an hour before the choice being like, can you give me space to interview Soccer Mommy? I'm like getting ready for the choice, like doing my makeup on the phone to her and then like finishing up and then legging it over to do the choice judging and then out after the choice. It's just one of those days where it was a lot going on. So I have a very, very fond memories associated with listening to this album because I'm remembering that day that just, like I said, just wouldn't be a thing now. But yeah, I think this is a really brilliant, accomplished album. I mean, a lot of her earlier stuff was this kind of bedroom pop indie thing, whereas here she's definitely moved into a much more fuller sound that I think is completely hers. It's not as, I suppose, introspective anymore. And I think that benefits her. Like I think there's 10 songs in this record and they're all written while she was touring. But the kind of the theme of the album, Colour Theory, didn't really emerge until after she had written all of them. So she kind of separates the album into songs that have like blue as the linking theme for depression, grey for mortality, and yellow for illness and sickness, which I think is really interesting because yellow is kind of something that we might associate with like happiness. But she writes a lot about her mother's illness on this album, and Yellow is the Colour of Her Eyes was one of my choices last week for my song of the year. I just think that she's grown up an awful lot, and there's a kind of a sadness about the record in that you are kind of hearing a young person singing about kind of having to grow up, maybe a little bit too early because of everything that she's kind of been through her life, not having a good time on tour, not really enjoying herself. And there's such an honesty in this, but she still kind of manages to have so much fun with this. Like she's taking a lot of influences from bands that she kind of grew up with. She's not afraid to write a song that's like 8.5 minutes long with like a really long outro that just works so well. I think she's absolutely smashed this. And I'm surprised that I haven't seen it top more lists, actually. I've seen it kind of hang around the kind of 10 to 15 mark, but I think this is a terrific album.
Okay, very good. Soccer Mommy. Yeah, I remember seeing her live once. Someday soon that'll happen again. Yeah. Okay, here is Circle the Drain from Soccer Mommy. Back down to the cold hard crown and it keeps getting colder. We'll be right back. Okay, that was your number three choice from Soccer Mommy, and was called Color Theory. My third choice, my number three choice for 2020 albums, is from Killer Mike and LP. It is Run the Jewels, RTJ4, an album which arrived at a very timely release date, coming shortly after the death of George Floyd, the killing of George Floyd at the hands of a US police officer. And as with all of the kind of Run the Jewels stuff, they always kind of talk about the brutal absurdity and oppression of American life in general, but it really had an extra resonance this time. And not only that, RTJ4 was really a return to form for the pair. Like, they really did produce an album that is just absolutely brilliant, just timely, felt like it's commenting on what's actually happening in the world, but as well, as ever, had some great guests on there. They had the likes of their old pal, Zach De La Rocha. There's Mavis Staples is on there. Pharrell is on that song Just, which is one of my favorite songs this year. And 2 Chainz as well, and Greg Noyce. And I think, if anything, I think RTJ3 was kind of lacking in a bit of buzz and fun, and it felt a bit tired. And here we are in the fourth edition, and it's not a case of diminishing returns. I feel like this is one of their best albums, maybe their best overall album, although probably RTJ2 is probably the best one. But I got a lot out of this year. I just, when you need an album of pure rap bangers that also talk about what's going on in the world, you could do an awful lot worse than RTJ. So I'm going to play Out of Sight, the song from RTJ4 featuring 2 Chainz, and it sounds like this.
Here come the menaces to sobriety, like what? Super thuggers thumping on a cut. What?
My motherfucking Uzi weighs a ton. Hit the drum till you hear it go.
Run. Piety just really isn't us. What a rush. See you cutting up a pie, that's my lunch.
Run. Your motherfucking pockets when I come. It's an honor to be robbed by Denise's only son. Yeah. Give her in it, baby boy, bit it. Moving extra heavy, whipping Chevy. Gotta get it, eat spaghetti with the mob. The vegan bitches eat them dick cause they don't eat no steak and lobster. Sosa was my hero. Honey, Tony's just a fucking
hobby. Out of mind, out of touch, out of time. Man, I smoke a bogey backwards with a thumb up like it's fine. One. Sleep and suffer, say, suffer, sleep divine. Leave me here to drown in glory, you're too good to cross that line. Run. Tragically struck down in my prime by the speed at which the bags are dropping. Should've watched the sky. You don't wanna live this life, it's really not sublime. I'm only doing what I want behind me. Loogies at the swine.
Okay, that was RTJ4, Out of Sight from RTJ4 from Run the Jewels.
I was enjoying that a lot.
Very good. Okay, your number two choice, please, for
my
album.
My number two choice for album of the year is Fetch the Bolt Cutters by Fiona Apple. This was a massive album this year. It was, it got, you know, that elusive, like, 10 out of 10 on Pitchfork, which we all need to get over that as a thing. But but still, when it happens, it's really, really exciting. And yeah, it was probably the biggest release of the year, maybe apart from Taylor Swift's Folklore, in terms of just everybody in my circle talking about it, going onto Twitter and kind of not being able to read anything that wasn't about this album, and, you know, people texting you. It was one of those moments, one of those big album moments. And I mean, no doubt the score from Pitchfork definitely contributed to that. But having spent more time with it, I think I found it initially quite difficult to return to it after we reviewed it, actually, because it is dealing with a lot of pain and a lot of really heavy topics. But returning to it after, you know, a few months of kind of setting it aside, I think I'd forgotten the amount of levity on it and the amount of kind of like, I think conceptually she has created a kind of very safe domestic space for herself within which she can kind of look into memories that are painful. And I mean, this is all happening, I suppose, in the meta narrative of it, but like survivors will know, or people who have like pain in the past will know that that idea is so essential to like facing demons or facing kind of past events that you haven't been able to face yet. And she just does it so brilliantly and so wonderfully by just building this fortress around herself. Like, you can, there's just so much like tactile domesticity on the album. She's using things from around the house as her instruments. Like, you can kind of feel her just reaching out and grabbing something, whether it's like, I think she used like an old box of bones. She got her dogs in to be on one of the tracks. You know, it doesn't matter what it is. It's just kind of this idea that she is in such a safe space that she can just create out of the four walls around her. And I think that that's just such a stark and brilliant message of positivity and of what I think should be or might be an idea to strive towards, even in like my own feminism. Like, it got me thinking so much about the role of the home and building a home for yourself and how that's, you know, important for women and for people and so on. Anyway, I think this is the first album that she produced kind of fully on her own. And it's just such a powerful, empowering, yet painful album. It's kind of like she's just so raw on this and inviting you into a space where you can be raw as well and bring your own stuff to it. But crucially, it all feels so safe. I don't mean safe as in she's not experimenting. She is experimenting a lot, but safe as in this is a place where you can
get to the bottom of things. A safe place to experiment, yeah.
Exactly. You can kind of address things along with her, along with Fiona. I think it's wonderful. It's challenging, definitely. But you know, the best work is she's a true artist, and she doesn't care what score we give her on this. But she's an icon.
Yeah, it's one of the biggest albums of the year for sure, and one of the most critically acclaimed, and rightly so. I figured you would include it here, so I yes. left it off. But yeah, it is. It's not one I've gone back to an awful lot yet, but that's okay. And it's funny, like, I think this year is one of those years where I'm really like, it's okay not to have a repeat listening factor to your album necessarily if it's something that actually gives a lot on a single listen or over less listens than something that was, oh, this is something I'm playing a lot. But yeah, there's a lot. That New Yorker piece that really gives some great context to the album and the recording and where Fiona Apple has been and where she's going, and especially with the album itself. So I would recommend that. So we're going to play Shamika.
Just for me, just to be crash cymbals. In class I pass the time, drawing a slash for every time. Second hand went by a group of five, done 12 times, just a minute. But Shamika said I had potential. 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 I used to march down the windy, windy sidewalk, slapping my leg with the riding crop, thinking it made me come off so tough. I didn't smile because a smile always seemed rehearsed. I wasn't afraid of the bullies, and that just made the bullies worse. In class I'd pass the time, drawing a slash for every time the second hand went by. A group of five done 12 times was a minute, but Shamika said I had potential. 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 Hurricane Gloria in Excelsis Deo. That's my bird and my tree. My dog and my man and my music is my holy trinity. Hurricane Gloria in Excelsis Deo. That's my bird and my tree. My dog and my man and my music is
compliment. And Shamika wasn't gentle and she wasn't my friend, but she got through to me and I'll never see her again. She got through to me and I'll never see her again. I'm pissed off, funny and warm. I'm a good man in the storm. And when the fall is torrential, I'll recall. Shamika said I had potential. Shamika said I had potential. Shamika said I had potential. Shamika said I had potential.
Okay, that was Fiona Apple. Album is called Fetch the Bold Colors. That was your number two choice. And my number two is it cheating slightly? It may be. I have put two albums together, but
Niall.
With good reason. Let me explain. This year, a band called Salt, S-A-U-L-T, released two albums, both untitled and in brackets, two different words or two different phrases. The first one came out in June. It was called Black Is. And the second one came out in September called Rise. And I put these two together because they are very much two sides of the same coin. They feel like companion pieces. The first one, Black Is, was very much a kind of soul searching treatise on being what it's like to be a black person in 2020. It has kind of got a gospel style hymnal vibe to it, very contemplative streams of thought and kind of, it draws a bit on dub and gospel and a bit of reggae and funk and stuff as well. It is what we do know. Well, we don't know an awful lot about Salt and who they are, and that's deliberate. Michael Kiwanuka is on the album. And there's people like the producer who worked on Little Sims' album, I also mentioned, but we don't really know who Salt are. And that's okay because they like the music to speak for itself, and the music does have a lot to say for itself. Untitled Black is very much like that. It was released on Juneteenth, actually, and it came with a statement that says the band intends to mark a moment where we as black people and of black origin are fighting for our lives. R.I.P. George Floyd and all those who've suffered from police brutality and systemic racism. Change is happening. We are focused. And that is a really good backdrop for where the first album, Untitled Black Is, pitches itself. It is, there are songs here called Don't Shoot, Guns Down, Sorry Ain't Enough, Stop Them. It's very much like almost gentle protest music or kind of tribal protest music in lots of ways. It's a beautiful album. Really is a beautiful album. And then not only that, but then they released another album in called Untitled Rise, which is more probably an upbeat kind of album, a bit more like disco and R&B kind of stuff, but still has some of that same searches for and answers for around identity. And these albums gave me so much, not only so much musical pleasure, but like I really felt like it was the right time, is the right albums for the right time this year in terms of the Black Lives Matter movement. These kind of albums were really important for me this year. The Untitled Rise is, yeah, like I said, it's more kind of, it has a bit more of a disco kind of funk, loads of more strings and kind of things going on. There's echoes of Gil Scott-Heron on these albums. There's kind of, it's being compared to Soul to Soul, the 90s Black British music collective. Untitled Rise definitely feels like it's trying to be a bit more escapist in terms of its music and leaning into that more kind of the escapism of disco. And disco, something obviously we talked about, that has been very prominent this year, funny enough, because it is escapist music. And when we can't go anywhere, that's what we kind of need. But yeah, there's some great, absolutely amazing and devastating songs here as well. A song called Uncomfortable lays it pretty bare and direct. Why do you keep shooting us? And I think Untitled Rise is probably personally my favorite album of the two, because it's probably less meandering and more musically complete. There's a lot of single, like 1 minute, 1.5 minute songs on Untitled Black Is, but Untitled Rise has a bit more in terms of its overall focus. There's a song called Scary Times, which is literally just somebody saying these are scary times, set to stirring strings and keys. They're really important albums, and ones that I bought on vinyl this year and been paying an awful, awful lot. So they kind of come together for me. And It was hard to separate the two, really, so I couldn't, I didn't separate the two at all. So.
Well, you've made a perfectly reasonable case for not doing so.
Okay,
thank we you. We will much. Allow it.
Okay, great. Well, I will play a song called Sunshine from the second one, untitled Rise. This is Sunshine, yeah. Just while that was playing there, I decided to just have a quick look and see if I could actually figure out who they are. I did that by looking up some publishing information. And it seems to be the two main artists seem to be an artist called Cleo Soul, who maybe is the singer there, and an artist in her own right. And then Dean Josiah Dean Winton. So there you go. That's Inflow is the producer, so I think that was the guy who produced Little Sims album, so maybe that's who Salt are actually after all that. So there you go.
Okay.
So exclusive news. Okay, so it's time for our number one albums of 2020.
Yeah, I mean, number one.
Walk it back.
I am as surprised as anyone that, you know, I was reshuffling this list a lot, and this album just kind of landed in the number one spot, and I was like, yeah, I think this feels right, actually. I don't know. I found it really, really hard. I mean, it was kind of between this album and Fiona Apple's album. I just find it hard. Anyway, my number one album of 2020 is The New Abnormal by The Strokes. I don't know why I find it so funny. I just do. I'm just really relieved and happy that I get to say something like the best album of 2020 is by The Strokes. Like, that's very exciting to me. But look, I just spend so much time with this album this year. I talked a little bit about it last week. I chose Bad Decisions as one of my songs of the year. And just the kind of the lift it gave me, it just came at the right time for me. You know, it came like quite early on during lockdown, but it was at the kind of stage in lockdown when it was starting to feel a bit real, and it was starting to feel like actually there's not as much of an end in sight here as we think there is. So it just brought a lot of light to me. And I definitely think that this is a return to form for The Strokes. I mean, I've been a Strokes fan for as long as I can remember. I think this is a brilliant step forward for the band. I think, you know, okay, so if you take even something as simple as Julian Casablanca's vocals, I think they've kind of never sounded better. Like, he is working around some really beautiful falsetto lines. I mean, on the song Selfless, it's beautiful on the song The Adults Are Talking. I feel like we've never been so close to him in that way, because obviously a lot of their earlier work was a lot of kind of different effects on his vocals, and now it's really nice to just hear him sing, and he sings really beautifully, and he sings brilliantly. And it's nice to also hear the Strokes singing about something like it's not this kind of abstraction that we might have become kind of used to in those like middling albums. Like these lyrics are much more immediate, much more clearly identifiable as being about things, whether that's politics or the idea of change or even things like depression and global warming. It's a lot more upfront than I thought it was going to be. And I mean, I think I mentioned this when we reviewed the album all those months ago, that they are letting the guitars lead their sound again. And that was, I think, the biggest relief for me, because they work so brilliantly when they kind of form their music around a really tight guitar hook. They're brilliant at it. It's what they do best. And yeah, so the song I chose to kind of to play from the album is the closer, actually, Ode to the Mets, which has actually become one of my favorite Stroke songs. I think it encapsulates so much of what I love about them. And it also signaled to me that this band still have so much more to give me, that I can still be surprised and still be moved by them. It's got a really beautiful two melodies, really. It's got like this false start. It's got this like drums, please, Fab has just been my like theme of the year. it's a really beautiful, harrowing song. And I mean, as it fades out and as Julian Casablancas kind of sings those final lines in it, it's probably the best closer of an album that I came across this year. And I just adore this album. And I don't know why it feels weird to have The Strokes as my number one album. I don't know why, but I think it's my most beloved this year. I think I'm just so grateful that it came to me when it did. And yeah, I still love The Strokes. Here we go, 2020.
Okay, great. Well, that's exactly the reason why I chose my number one, which we'll talk about after this. But yes, yeah. Let us play Ode to the Mets from The Strokes.
Up on his horse, up on his horse, not gonna wake up here anymore. There's some time, it's not the truth, it's just a story I tell to you. Easy to say, easy to do, but it's not easy. Well, maybe for you. Hope that you find it, hope that it's good, hope that you some slack as he sits back, sizes you up, plans his attack. Drums, please, Fab. And I got it all, I got it all, waiting for me down on the street. But now you gotta do something special for me. What's on my mind? Then I'll walk out, then I'll feel fine. Yeah, I'm under his thumb, I'm on his back. I will not show my teeth too quick. I need help, I need help, I need love, I need love. Back from his trip, he's at the door.
Isn't that nice now? One of your favorite bands released your favorite album of the year for now.
Isn't it nice though? It is nice. There you go.
Okay. It is the last choice is left to me. I'm going to read out a bit I read today to keep the suspense going a little longer about this album that I picked as my number one. It's a surprise to me also. And I'll explain why after this. Okay, here's a thing I read today about this album. A thrilling cascade, expertly manipulated references to 45 years of pop sounds that comes off as neither market-tested nor manic because its creator has so caringly compiled and arranged them. Like one of those Wikipedia entries that's clearly the work of a joyous obsessive, it's exactly the sort of supposedly ephemeral product that lasts because it manages to transmit confidence, charm, delight, and pride in its own existence. Okay.
Oh, so that's good. Yeah. That's good writing. Who wrote that?
I can't remember where I saw it. I think it was maybe on NPR, actually. The NPR's Top 50. I think it was that one.
That's fabulous.
Yeah. So this feels very strange to say this because currently this is where I'm at. My favorite album of the year in 2020 is Dua Lipa's Future Nostalgia. If you had told me in January that this was the one, I would have been hammering all year. I would have been like, what?
Same, I don't really like Dua Lipa. complete same. Weird year, weird choices for number one. Here we are. It's fine. It's our fucking podcast.
Exactly. And, you know, I mean, like I've mentioned it before, we've talked about it before, but the idea that, you know, music can be a form of escapism. For me this year, the Dua Lipa album Future Nostalgia was that form of escapism. It gave me a lot of solace. It gave me a lot of joy. It gave me a lot of heart. It gave me pure pop thrills. It gave me great songs. And it was something I went and listened to an awful, awful lot this year. So much so, like, and even then the club album that came afterwards, which is great remixes of Yeji, who we featured earlier, is on it. The likes of Jada G and Joe Goddard and even Madonna and Missy Elliott are on it. Blessed Madonna, who put it all together. So yeah, Future Nostalgia was the album that we reviewed on the podcast and were very impressed with. And it just never really left my rotation at all year. I think the only thing I'll say in terms of negative, there's only about two okay songs on it. The rest of them are great songs. I'd say even the first one, the title song, isn't that great, but the run from song 2 to song 9 are just absolutely unreal. You got like Don't Start Now, Cool, Physical, Levitating, Pretty Please, Hallucinate, Love Again, and Break My Heart. Like, it is very rare to get an album that solid that you can go back to over and over and over again. I listened to this a lot this year because it really did improve my mood. And in a time where we were in lockdown or able to do very little, not able to go and dance, not able to go do those kind of things, this was the perfect refreshment in terms of having those kind of feelings and ideas. And it was simply just one of those great pop albums that I think I'll be listening to for a long time, and that's as simple as it comes, really. I can't really say more than that there. It's just I'm surprised myself, so there you go.
I think Physical is one of the only pop songs that I've listened to on repeat this year. I haven't listened to a lot of pop music this year or kind of wanted to go back to it, but you cannot deny the power of Physical. It's just such an unbelievable banger. Yeah,
there's so many good songs on this album. I'm gonna play Pretty Please because it's one of the album ones kind of more suited. She did a great NPR Tiny Desk concert actually last week, which is very much worth to watch. Obviously no one can go to travel and actually do the Tiny Desk concert physically, so they did it in London, but really nice stripped down set. So this is Pretty Please from Dua Lipa.
In the middle, I think I lied a little. We took it there, I wasn't gonna change, but that went out the window. Yeah, I know that I seem a little stressed out, but you're here now and you're turning me on. I wanna feel a different kind of tension. Yeah, you guess it, the kind that's fine. I hate it when you leave me unattended, cause I miss ya and I need ya.
at ease. Pretty please, I need your hands on me. Sweet relief, pretty please, exactly where I want me. Yeah, underneath your body. Yeah, if we take it further, I swear I ain't gonna break. So baby, come try me. Baby, come find me. Baby, don't wind me up. I know that I seem a little stressed out, but you're here now, and you're turning me on. I wanna feel a different kind of tension. Yeah, you guessed it, the kind that's mine. Hate it when you leave me unattended, 'cause I miss ya, and I need your love. But my mind is running wild, could you help me slow it down? Put my mind at ease. Pretty please, I need your hands on me. Sweet relief, pretty, put my mind at ease. Trickle down my spine.
Okay, that is it. That is our albums of the year. I think
we
picked 18 in total there, so that's quite a lot. And there's many more to discover and talk about, obviously, but we won't be doing that now. That's quite enough for now.
Yes.
But really, look, I think that's a really solid list. There's plenty of other albums we could have chose. There's plenty of other albums I have on my list. There's plenty of other I haven't heard yet. There's great album from Perfume Genius we talked about earlier this year. There was Charlie XCX Lockdown album. There was J Electronica, really good rap album. Princess Nokia, Chloe
Milo,
and Halle,
Silverbacks.
Yeah, all of the Irish ones. We also reviewed Jesse Ware's album. Loads of others, so many others that actually I made a long list of albums this year. And Jarvis, the Jarvis album is one I nearly forgot about.
I loved that, yeah.
Yeah, and then even tomorrow, the Avalanche's new album is out as well, called We Will Always Love You, which I've heard and I quite enjoyed it a lot. So a nice December album if you're looking for something new to listen to. So that'll be out as well, but that's it. Yeah, like next week we're going to have, like you just said, we're going to have a Christmas party. We're going to have a Christmas party. Over Zoom.
I said to Niall while Dua Lipa was playing there, I was like, next week for the podcast awards, let's do it in the evening and let's get drunk.
Yeah.
So join us for that. Join us for our Christmas party, because we don't get to do one. We had a sick Christmas party last year with Kelly and Luke as well, and that was the best. So we'll do our best this year.
Yeah, Kelly, Luke and Mike joined us last year in person, but Kelly and Luke will be joining us as well next week to share some of their thoughts on 2020 in terms of music. But all that remains me to say is thank you, Andrea.
Thank you, Niall.
Hit up her Substack, andreacleary.substack.com.
New post coming.
Yeah, I will be starting on Saturday, I think, or maybe next week. But I am going to be doing 12 playlists of Christmas, which is basically 12 different playlists, maybe even more, to be honest. Playlists every day leading up to Christmas, which is basically best of 2020, different types. You talked about their pop songs that you love this year. I have a playlist of 32 pop songs from this year.
I think I've also promised you a playlist for one of those.
Yes, you'll be doing one of those. I've got ambient and chilled, rap and hip hop, dance electronic, rock, disco, R&B and soul. Loads of things to share, loads of things for you to listen to. So if you're interested and you want to support us, patreon.com/909 and join up this month, and you'll get access to all those playlists as well as all the weekly ones and all the regular ones and all the special things that we put out. So yeah, that'll be great. So listen, looking forward to our final podcast of the year next week. We're going to have a few beers and have some chats. It'll be a little less formal than this one. Not that it was formal, really.
Yeah, this is maybe as formal as we go, to be fair.
Yes, but it is nice to just go deep and talk about loads of different albums. So thank you, Andrea, as ever. And I hope you have a nice weekend. And I hope everyone listening out there has a nice weekend too. And not too stressful. Look after yourself. Look after your head. And we will talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Right.